know, with all the honors that you have received, all the recognition, your 7,500 hours, you're the highest ranking living ace today in the country, American. Five DFCs, two Legions of Merit, Bronze Star, 16 Merit Medals, and on with these honors. The pilots are honored, but at the same time, as you're explaining, these planes, and Jack did earlier, these planes have to be maintained to be able to fly. How important to you were the ground crews?
Oh, gosh. My crew chief story. I always want to tell it. Because our ground crews, you know, they didn't get. They were not doing the dying, but they wanted to contribute too, just like we did. But you know, nobody knows who the Bud Anderson's crew chief is. I have some stories to tell you about how significant their help was. For example, I flew 116 combat missions. That was two tours, which was almost 500 hours of combat flying without a single abort for any reason whatsoever. Now, I should have aborted a couple of times, but I was on my way home anyway, so it didn't count. But I found Otto Heino in Nevada when we were training in P-39s, and I kept him almost through the whole war. And he was an unusual guy. I could tell that he was a perfectionist. And one time we were flying these old beat-up P-39s in Tonopah, Nevada, and we had the armor glass like that, and then a gun sight right behind it. You know, you're looking at them like this, the armor plate, and then the gun sight glass, and there's only an eighth of an inch through there. Would get dust and dirt and stuff, and then it's right in the middle of your vision. And he came to me one time and he said, "What can I do to make this airplane better for you?" Well, it was already running like a top. And I said, "Well, that gun sight is terrible. We can't see that. Can't see through there very well." And I knew if you had to remove the gun sight and clean it, put it back, then you had to synchronize the guns and all kinds of workload. So I just mentioned that to him, and then next morning I come out to fly, and the gun sight and the armor glass are crystal clear. I said, "Wow." I said, "How do you do that, Otto?" He says, "Oh, I found a turkey feather, and I ran it in and out there." And got it clean, but he was innovative. And then when we got over to Europe, he would, regular new spark plugs and
rebuilt or
re-engineered or rebuilt spark plugs.
Basically cleaned.
Yeah. And he went over and found another Finnish guy. He was a Finn. In Air Corps Supply, and he says, "Now you save the new plugs for me." And so, and he changed the plugs every time, every mission that I flew.
Now, they had so much tetraethyl lead in them at the time, they would tend to contaminate the points, and they would migrate to the points, and then you'd have a spark plug that didn't work. So it had to be cleaned or replaced every time.
Yeah, and you know how hard it is to get on those inside plugs on the V. It was a lot of work, but he did that. That's the kind of things he did. And the story I really want to tell you too, I was trying to get to it, was in the fall of 1944, I'd come back from my R&R at home, and I picked out a brand new D, and it was first painted like this airplane in dark green camo. And I was flying missions in November, and the first snow hit Germany, and it was just white over Germany, and you could tell it was heavy snow, and it was going to stick around. So I'm going to finish my tour sometime in the winter, and so I'm looking at. We weren't. That's one. That would be one little box of B-17s. Can you imagine those as far as you could see? But anyway.
So winter's come. Snow on the ground.
Yeah, and we're flying now. We don't care about the paint schemes too much. We were having silver ones. Dark camo, half and half. It was just kind of a, who cares? Well, I cared. And flying over there, we used to fly in that, what we call figure four. And I'm looking down at two airplanes on the snow that are camouflaged, dark, and two of them that are silver. And which ones would stand out? The silver, the camo ones, of course. So when I got back, I'm in my revetment, and he was a flight chief now, but he always came back, and he handpicked a new crew chief for me. And he was always there when I left, and he was always there when I took off. And how'd the flight go, you know, and all this stuff? And I said, well, it's great, and everything's fine. But by the way, when you get this thing laid up for heavy maintenance, would you please de-paint it and put it in a natural aluminum paint scheme? I explained how it showed up against the snow, and for tactical reasons it might save my butt. I didn't think about it too much, and went back. Next day, I was the operations officer. I decided to fly tomorrow. Put my name on the board and went home. And the next day, went home. Went back to the barracks. Come back in the morning, get ready, go get the briefing, come out to the airplane. My airplane was parked in a revetment. I had to walk up the steep edge of it. I got up the top and I looked down, and here it is, painted just like this, in glooming aluminum. And I was all shocked, you know. I just thought about the manpower of taking that thing. They used 145 grade fuel to get rid of the fuel. The three of them were standing there kind of at attention, and I felt like, I don't know, I felt like a jerk. And I said, did they think I gave them a direct order to do that? And then I thought about it a little bit, and no, you know, they wanted to do that. That was their contribution. You know, their extra effort to do that. And I just can't say enough about the crew chiefs of the world. And you guys that own airplanes and fly airplanes, I think you might pat your crew chief on the back once in a while and thank them for what they do.
Jack, yeah.
I asked Colonel Anderson a question yesterday that I've been in his presence for, it seems like 20 years, but asked him a question yesterday that I didn't know the answer to, and I think you might be interested in his answer and what stood behind it. But I knew that he flew the 1D model when we had lots of D models in 44 and 45. He flew 1D model for his first tour, for his second tour, but he flew multiple airplanes in his first tour, And I was curious how many B models he had in his first tour. I guess this is the one he finished his first tour with, but he told me that he had 3 airplanes, but he never got a bullet hole in one of them, and I was curious what happened to the other 2 airplanes.
Well, the first one wasn't painted up quite as fancy as this one was. It had Old Crow right underneath the exhaust stacks, kind of with a stencil, you know, just a white stencil board.
Like Tonopah.
Yeah. And a young pilot by the name of Boyle was over Holland and got shot down, had to bail out of it. And so that's number one. Number two, I don't remember the tail number on it, but I exchanged it for whatever this dash number is. I can't remember, but the engines were slightly different, and I wanted that engine, so I picked out this airplane, 823. That's not the real airplane, but it's painted like it. And then we were allowed to put the red and yellow on them and paint the tail red later. And
you had the Malcolm Hood on it, too.
Yeah. And that's the one I kept, and I shot down 13 and 13 in that shared Heinkel, 1/4.
Yeah, how do you share? How do you shoot down 1/4 of an airplane?
Well, you share it with 3 other people.
So a group effort?
That's a long story if you want to hear it.